Just 3 weeks, we're going to have three classes, sorry, of Hilchos Chanukah, or the Gemara, as the Gemara discusses the laws of Chanukah. So I wanted to just discuss today three words. We're going to discuss today three words the whole time. But I just, as an introduction, I'll read for you, I don't know, 20 words. We'll go through the first one, and that's what we're going to be discussing for these three classes. This very first paragraph. Tana Rabbana. The Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos discusses all the laws of Chanukah, and within that, it's basically from in the Talmud, it's from Chaf Aleph and Beis, from 21a, 21b, all the way till Chaf Dalet, till 24, till page 24 in the Talmud. And this is one part of that chunk. This is one part of it. Tana Rabbana. Our rabbis taught us mitzvos Chanukah ner ish ubeso. The mitzvah of lighting the Chanukah menorah is ner ish ubeso. Is ner for, I'm just literal translation, is ner for the person, for the man, and his household, or and his house. The literal translation is and his house, I guess. Ubeso, his house. That's the basic level of fulfilling the obligation of lighting the Chanukah candles. V'ha mahadrin, those who want to do it on a mahadrin level, which is what we'll discuss on Thursday, Ner l'kol echad ve'echad is you have to light it for each individual. Each individual has to light the menorah. So it's not just one light for a person and his house, but it's one light for each individual. That's the second level. V'hamahadrin min ha-mahadrin, now the third level, the highest level of mahadrin min ha-mahadrin, be'shamay omrim yom rishon madlik shmona mikan ve'elach pochis v'holich. For this highest level, there's a dispute. Beis Shammai says that on the first day we light 8, and the second day we light 7, the third we light 6. We go from 8 all the way down to 1. Beis Hillel omrim yom rishon madlik achas. Beis Hillel says it's the opposite direction. On the first day you light 1, which is how we do it nowadays. Mikan ve'elach mosif aholich. You light 1 on the first day, 2nd on the second day, 3rd on the third day, so on and so forth. So we have three different levels in terms of how to fulfill the mitzvah of Chanukah. The basic level is what we call ner ish ubeso. Just one light for the person himself and ubeso, and his house. As a literal translation, his house. The second level, we have a mahadrin here. Mahadrin means to beautify it. Either means to beautify or one that runs after. To be a mahadrin could also mean to run after. On that second level, it's where each person in the house lights. And then on that third level of mahadrin, mina mahadrin, the highest level of beautifying the mitzvah is where you go from either 8 to 1 or 1 to 8. So we'll discuss each three of these classes. Each one is going to discuss a different level. So today we'll discuss the first level.
It doesn't say, like, mahadrin, mina mahadrin, the way that we do it is a light, adding light every day. But it doesn't say that.
Doesn't say that. We'll discuss that. Okay. That is the third class. Okay. So that's next week, next Monday. So today we'll discuss the first level. On Thursday we'll discuss the second level. And then a week from today, on Monday, we will discuss the third level.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Is this common that there's three levels to make?
Not at all. We will discuss this next week. Great question. Avram Dov is asking, where do we ever find such a thing where, when it comes to mitzvahs, we have different levels. We do have a concept of hiddur mitzvah, where you could beautify a mitzvah. Let's say when you take an esrog on sukkahs, so there's a concept of hiddur mitzvah to have a beautiful esrog. It was always hard for me to figure out which esrog is beautiful and which one is not, but there is a concept of having a beautiful esrog on sukkahs. But ultimately, the mitzvah is just to pick up that esrog. We hardly ever, if ever, do we have such a concept of having three different levels of fulfilling a mitzvah. And it's not just beautifying that object of the esrog, but you're actually doing it in a totally different way. Mm. It's not like you're beautifying that object, potentially, but you're doing it in a totally different way. So that's something which we'll discuss on Thursday. But let's just discuss on the first level here. Mitzvah Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, the basic obligation for Chanukah is ner ish ubeso. Let's focus on these three words. That's the whole shir is just these three words. Ner ish ubeso. So a person has to light him and his household. So what does that mean? What do you think that means? Ner ish ubeso.
One candle.
One candle for the whole house. Okay, so that's what, let's read Rashi, that's what Rashi says.
It's not clear from this brisa whether or not it's once on Hanukkah or every night on Hanukkah.
Yeah,
the assumption is every night, just because from other Gemaras which say that we light every night.
Okay, so it's not from this price,
but it's not because of this price. Correct. From this price alone, you wouldn't know how many days you could light the whole year. You don't know anything from this price, whether it's one day or 365 days. So ner ishu beso, a person lights him and his household. So Rashi says ner echad b'chol laila. Rashi fills it in, and he says that we light one candle for every night of Hanukkah. V'ish v'chol b'nei beso sagi luhu b'ner echad. And for the person, v'chol b'nei beso, and for his entire household, it works with just one light. So how does he define beso? A person lights ner ishu beso. A person lights for himself, for the person. Ubeso, what is ubeso? How does he translate ubeso? Family. It doesn't mean the literal house. For him and his house. He doesn't say and his house. He adds a few words. He says, v'chol b'nei beso. And for not his house, but for his household. For all the members of his house. So he's adding on. So one could have understood that when the Gemara says, ne'er ishu beso, it means for him and his house. Literally, just his house. Doesn't have to be his household, the members of his house. You could have translated it as just a person has to light for himself and for the house. The house has to have candles. But that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, ner ish for himself, v'chol b'nei beso. When it says bias, when it says house, it doesn't literally mean for the house itself, you have to light for the house. It means that you have to light for all the members of the house. All the members of the house are included in this one lighting, in this basic level. Right, that's what Rashi tells us. What would it mean in this alternative explanation, which Rashi does not say? What would it mean that a person has to light and his house? How could a house light? House does not light unless you light the house. But what does it mean that it's for the house?
As opposed to for the household.
Yeah, but what would that mean?
I have to have a candle in your house as well as lighting.
Could you think of any other mitzvah which is more house oriented as opposed to person oriented? You can't answer this question. Which is house oriented as opposed to person oriented?
Mezuzah.
Mezuzah, excellent. Mezuzah. If you think about the mezuzah has nothing to do with how many people are in the house. How many people live in the house? Whether one person lives in the house or 1,000 people live in the house, it doesn't make a difference. You have to put a mezuzah on that front door, or on let's say, on the bedroom door. Let's say.
You know, no one lives in the house.
That's a bigger discussion, but yeah.
For a house. At least temporary.
Even potentially, if no one lives in the house also, you'd have to put up a mezuzah. Mm-hmm. You have to put up that mezuzah because a house needs to have a mezuzah. Mm-hmm. If you own the house, so that house needs to have a mezuzah. So one could have entertained the possibility that when the Gemara says ner ishu beso, what does that mean? Ner ishu beso, a person has to light and his house. Meaning a person has to light. The obligation for the person to light is for the house to have a menorah. The house has to have a menorah. It's not about fulfilling the obligation for yourself and for your household, for the members of the house. It's not like Rashi saying that it seems like each individual has an obligation. Everyone in the family has an obligation, but we fulfill that obligation through that one person lighting, the head of the household lighting, or whoever lights. That's what Rashi seems to say. The alternative explanation is to say, no, it has the obligation is not on each individual, just like we don't find an obligation on each individual to put up the mezuzah. It's not an obligation on each person in the house to put up the mezuzah. There's just an obligation to put up the mezuzah when you have a house. So one could have entertained that the explanation of ner ishu beso means that the house has to have a menorah. The house that you own has to have a menorah.
What would it have to do with Isha?
Yeah. Couldn't you just say
Ner Beta? So it's a good question. But I think the idea is that it has to be, there's also an aspect of a person lighting it for the house. Meaning you can't just appoint a non-Jew to light it for you, that as long as it's lit, somehow it gets lit. automatically. No, a person has to be involved in it, but so a person does have to perform the action of lighting it, but ultimately the obligation is on having the house have a menorah. Not necessarily on the individual lighting it, meaning all individuals of the house lighting it, but it's just that you have to have, each house has to have a menorah. So these are the two ways of understanding this one line. Ner ishu beso. Either it's that ner ishu beso means each individual has an obligation, which seems to be what Rashi is saying. He says beso, the house, means kol b'nei beso. Each individual in the house has an obligation. The other way of understanding it is that no, it's not an obligation on each individual of the house, but at this basic level, the obligation is really on the house itself. Every house has to have a menorah. Not that each individual in the house has to have a menorah, but every single house that's the Jews are living in it, so then that has to have a menorah.
Can you go a little further, perhaps, and say that if your household might extend to beyond your house, like if you've got your kids traveling away at the Chanukah, but when you're lighting, that includes them, even though they're not in your house at that time. Is there not a member of your house?
So right who there? You're trying to explain for Rashi or a different explanation?
Just the basic level of
Ner Ishu Beso.
For his household.
You're saying for the household?
Yeah, for the household. That's right.
So then within Rashi, whose understanding is that it's for the household, you could go even further and say that when he says it's for the household, it means even if the members of your family are not even present, they're somewhere else,
right.
So then that would work. So there are opinions that say that. You're the one that the influence of the Sephardi shul is upon you. And that is how Sephardim paskin.
Oh yeah.
And that's also the opinion of that's the opinion of the Rambam. We'll get to it next week. We'll get to it Thursday. But that's how the Rambam paskins. That the obligation is on just the head of the household to fulfill wherever your children are, wherever the members of your family are. So then it's just the head of the household lights and fulfills the obligation for everybody else. But that is how the Rambam understands it. The Rambam also, if you look at the Rambam now, he seems to focus on the house. As opposed to Rashi, who focuses on each individual of the house, when the Rambam explains this first step of Ner Ishu Baiso, and if you look at this last source 3 on the first page, see how he describes it, and it's slightly different from Rashi. Kama Neros Hu Madlik B'Chanukah. This is at the basic level. How many lights do you light on Chanukah? Mitzvasa, the basic mitzvah, I skipped the rest of it. He discusses Mahadrin and Mahadrin and Mahadrin also, but I left that out. But the basic level, he says, Sheyehe kol bayis ubayis madlik ner echad, bein shehayu anchei bayis merubin, bein shelo hayu bo ela adam echad. He says, it seems to be that his focus is on, the mitzvah is that each and every house has a candle. And then he adds on, independent of how many people are living in the house. Doesn't make a difference how many people are living in the house. But he doesn't phrase it that there's a mitzvah on each person to light, which is fulfilled by the head of the household. That's not what he says. He says that the mitzvah is that every house has to be lit.
As long as there's at least one person in it.
As long as there's one person in it. Yeah, there has to be one person in it. But as long as there's one person in it, so then each house has to be lit. So that, I think, is an important distinction between Rashi and the Rambam. When we say ner ish ubeso, how do you define bias? According to Rashi, the definition of house, of bias, is kol b'nei beso, is the members of the house. As opposed to for Rambam, the definition of bias is house, that the house itself has to have a menorah. Okay. So if we turn the page, this is... When the commentators refer to this distinction, this is a famous distinction. When they refer to this distinction, they call it a chovas hagavra as opposed to chovas habayis, a debesa. Whether it's an obligation on the person, is there an obligation on the person to light, which seems to be how Rashi understands it, or is it an obligation not on the person but on the house? Not that the house has an obligation, but that the person has an obligation to light it because his house needs to have a menorah. Okay, the problem with taking the either approach, we'll see, is the following Gemara. And this Gemara is an extremely, extremely puzzling Gemara to really fully understand. It's a very just independent of what we just discussed. Just the Gemara itself is a very puzzling, very difficult concept to understand. The Gemara says on follows. This is on page 2 now, source 4. On the top of page 2. Amar Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, Achsanai Chayev B'ner Chanukah. A guest has an obligation to light the menorah. Let's stop. Don't look on. A guest has an obligation to light. Based on what we just said, does a guest have an obligation to light?
So far we said... Not separate from his house. Like, according to Rashi, like, as long as someone's lighting in that house, sounds like it's fine.
No one's... He's a guest where nobody's lighting in his home.
Sorry.
Nobody's lighting in his own home. I was going to say
Rambam would care about his own.
Let's just clarify the case. Then you'll explain. A guest, somebody who lives in his home, he lives by himself in his home, and he's going somewhere else for Hanukkah. He's going to Mexico for Hanukkah. Right? His whole family is going to Mexico for Hanukkah. But there's nobody in his own home. Mm-hmm. So does he have to... Would you think he has an obligation to light?
Yes.
He's staying in a hotel?
It sounds like he has an obligation.
He's staying in another Jew's house.
Yeah, he's staying in a menorah lit in his house.
He's not going to be considered to be a member of that guy's household.
He's staying in not a hotel. He's staying in another Jew's house. So right. he's not a member of that household.
I would say he's not.
Right. Okay.
He's talking about family, I would say.
He's not a member of that household. Okay, and therefore?
And therefore, when the guy's lighting for his household, it's not including people that are in the house but are not members of that household, that would include guests.
So do you have to light? You, the guest, do you have to light?
I would say the guest has to light.
Why does he have to light?
Because he's not a member of the household.
Who said that you have an obligation
not,
to light?
I see.
Okay, so according to Rashi, he does. Because he says, like, Ner Echa Bechol, Ner Echa Lelev, Ish Bechol, Chol B'nei Beisa. Like, he doesn't have a Ish Bechol B'nei Beisa lighting for him. Like, he's a household. He's lit.
So you're saying according to Rashi...
Like if his wife had lit at home, that would be okay.
No, we're not discussing that case. We're not discussing that case right now.
Okay.
Let's say everyone in the house is going to Mexico, and right. They're staying not in a hotel, they're staying at their friend's house in Mexico.
So why is that?
They're each.
So you think that it's obvious that he would have to light?
Yes.
Does anybody want to disagree?
You think it's obvious that you do, that the guest would have to light?
Yeah.
According to Rashi.
I don't think
According to Rambam, not.
Also, yes, but he doesn't have to light. He has to make sure that someone's lighting it in his house.
There's nobody in his house.
Yeah,
there's nobody in his house.
Rambam says it at least has to be one person.
Why?
So there's no one in there.
Oh, you're right.
You need one person in the house.
Yeah.
The house that he's in.
So according to the Rambam now, we're about to suggest right now that according to the Rambam, you do not have to light. According to Rashi, you do have to light. Right?
Yeah.
But according to Rashi, you would have your own obligation to light. Right? Each person has to light in the house that they're in. That's what Dez said. I'm just quoting from Dez. I'm not saying what's correct and what's not correct.
But if it's connected to the house, then that house is already having its candle, and unfortunately his house won't have one. So you lost that mitzvah, I would say.
You're saying according to Rashi?
Even according to
Rambam. So we're saying according to the Rambam now, there is no obligation to light.
By Rashi, he's got that obligation because he and his household are guests in this place, and he's not being included in the household of his host.
So we decided that he's not being included. Okay.
That actually does decide. Let's pinpoint this on somebody here.
Okay.
You asked us to stop at the notion this person is a guest.
And he's obligated to light.
And
he's obligated to light.
Yeah.
That
sounds like it works with Rashi. Fine. So it sounds like it works with Rashi. They have an obligation to light. And as of now, I think we have a dispute here. I'm not sure. Let's hold off on what you're saying. But let's say, to make things simple for right now, according to Rashi, the guest would then just have to light wherever he is. He's at somebody else's house, so he'll have to light at somebody else's house. Now, this first statement should have to fit with the Rambam. Nobody argues with this first statement. There's no other Gemara which disputes this first statement of Rav Sheshes. So the Rambam, we're going to have to figure out, how does the Rambam fit with that first statement? Right? The Rambam says that there's an obligation on the house, not on the individual. And yet, when you're a guest, you also have an obligation to light. That's pretty strange. Just right?
It's because if it's, house. It's, no, it's not. Why is that?
It's a not a non-Jew's house.
If it's a non-Jew's house...
Even if it's a non-Jew's house, so what?
It's not a non-Jew's house.
No one's lighting in that house.
Every Jewish house needs a candle lit there, it sounds like. Like, mitzvah shayev called bayis madlik nera echad. And then, so we're saying here that, but it needs to have at least one person in it because of the last part. But it does have one person in it in general. It just doesn't have one person in it. Like, he's away right now. But you could say that that still is obligated to have one because there's a person who resides there generally.
So you want to say that when Rav Shesha says, nobody says this, but if you want to say that Rav Shesha says that when the guest has an obligation to light, it's not where he is presently, but it's in his house where she left. To make sure that...
something lit there.
And if you're going to compare it to mezuzah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Because mezuzah is independent of the person...
Correct.
I wasn't there last night, but that's okay.
Yeah. What?
Like, even if you weren't at home last night.
Okay. You still have to have your mezuzah. Correct. We'll see. When they compare it to mezuzah, it's not a complete comparison.
Okay.
I'm not going with their comparison. I'm just going with...
So the reason why they don't say it is because of the next line. The reason why they don't say your explanation is because of the next line. But that is, even for the Rambam, that would not be a correct understanding of this line, just because of the next line.
What was wrong with Eitan's explanation that Afsanai means that you're staying in a hotel? If you're staying in a hotel, that's your residence. So your residence means a...
It's because of... it's also because of the next line. The guest is clearly somebody who's staying at somebody else's house. They're not renting out. When you're renting out, anyways, when you're at a hotel, you're not viewed as a guest. You're viewed as the owner for the night. You're not called a guest when you're staying at a hotel. You're paying for your room. So it's not called a guest. Okay, so right now we have problems for the Rambam. How do you understand why would a guest be obligated to light if the obligation to light is on the house, not on the person? Okay. Now we're going to have a problem for Rashi. You have to have problems for both, right? Omer Rabzera. Rabzera, let's go on. Rabzera says the following. He now qualifies Rav Sheshes. He's qualifying this concept that a guest has an obligation to light. He says, Meresh ki avina beirav. At first, when I was a single guy learning in yeshiva, where it used to be that they would learn in yeshiva and they would stay at people's houses and learn in yeshiva, mishtatfina bepriti bahade ushpiza. So what would I do to light? I was staying at my host, and I would pay them a pruta. A pruta is a small amount of money. I would pay them a pruta, and then they would light for me. That's what they would do. To fulfill my obligation, if Sheshis just said, I have an obligation to light. So me, the guest, I'm a yeshiva guy, I have an obligation to light. So I would give a pruta, a small amount of money, to my host. That's what I would do. And then the next part is really not as important, but Basar the Nesivi Isisai Amino Hashta Vadelo Tsuchino de Kamadlika Lai Begav Besai. Once I got married, so I still went to yeshiva away from my wife, but my wife would light in my home for me. So I wouldn't have an obligation to light where I am, because my wife would light for me. Fine, let's ignore that second half of the statement. But the first half of the statement is that when I was single, so I would stay at other people's homes, and the way that I would fulfill my obligation is by giving a certain amount of money to my host. Right? I would give a certain amount of money to my host.
Well, that debunks one of my ideas. That when the candles were lit in his house by his parents, that would have included him as part of the household, even though he wasn't in the household. But clearly that can't be correct, because he has to get his candle lit elsewhere.
So there's that's a bigger question. That's also a question amongst Sephardim about what happens with yeshiva students, because then they might not no longer be viewed as part of your household. But let's say somebody that goes off to university. So they might not no longer be viewed as part of your household because they don't live with you for most of the year. So this student, who's a yeshiva student, so he's... Let's say we see from this Gemara at least that he's not defined as part of the household. That much we could say.
Yeah, that he's not, he shouldn't be defined as part of the household even when he's married.
Oh, he does go home sometimes.
So he's not Rabbi Kiva.
Not Rabbi Kiva, yeah. He goes home sometimes. twice a week, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole discussion of its own.
Once.
What constitutes a household?
Yeah, that's a whole big discussion. That's a bigger discussion. We're not going to have time for in these three classes. Anyway, but the Gemara tells us that the way he fulfilled his obligation, how did he fulfill his obligation? By giving a certain amount of money to the landlord.
To the host, not just the landlord.
So let's hold on. Forget about the Rambam and Rashi. Ignore Rambam and Rashi. What does this accomplish? What in the world? What are we doing here? What does this accomplish? I'm giving money to him. I don't understand. What's going on? If I have an obligation, let me light. Why can't I go ahead and light? And if he's my messenger to light, let's say he's my messenger to light, where do we ever have such a concept that in order to appoint him as a messenger, I have to pay him? I can appoint him as a messenger without paying him. I don't have to pay him for him to be my messenger to light. And if why can't I light myself? Forget about appointing a messenger. Let me just light. So forget about Rashi and the Rambam for a second.
It doesn't seem that
he could light.
This was the simplest way of doing it. Yeah. Maybe he had no oil. Okay.
So you could give that as a suggestion. So you want it. So that would solve half the problem. But why do you have to pay him at all? What's the concept of paying him? If he's my messenger, let him be my messenger. What's the concept of paying him?
Renting space.
You're renting space. So if you're renting space, so then it's like it's yours, so yeah. Then you would then have to light also.
Yeah.
He has to light also.
No, he doesn't have to light. He didn't light. He didn't say that he lit. He said that he just gave him money.
He's kind of in the midst of at least...
And the way he fulfilled his obligation is by giving a certain amount of money to the host.
The proof is like minimal, right?
Minimal, yeah, minimal.
He's probably purchasing a chalik of a portion of the supplies to light, oil, wicks.
Okay, and therefore?
And therefore what? Why does he even have to do that?
That seems to imply the obligation is on the individual.
He becomes part of the household.
He becomes part of the owner.
He's contributing to that.
No, he becomes part of the mitzvah.
A lot of things going on here.
He's a guest. He doesn't know where to get all the supplies. So he contributes to the household. He becomes part of the household.
He becomes part of the household. How does he become part of the household?
Because he's contributing to the action. Mm. Instead of going to the store and trying to find everything, the household already collected everything.
And what do you accomplish by being part of the household?
If
I'm asking you questions, it means you're in the right direction. You're good.
Well, then you only need to let it once. Each household.
You're saying
the household, when they have the household lights, he's part of it.
Excellent, he's part of it. Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. Anybody else have any other suggestions?
Why does it make you part of the household?
We'll get to it.
To the GDP of
but
the
you're heading in the right
why
direction.
Why can't he likewise be part of the individual?
Steve said that
he's a guest.
That like, what are you doing when you give the money?
You're actually buying a part of the mitzvah.
You're
buying yourself into the mitzvah. So one of the things on Friday nights that Rosenblatt is often reminds us of is the fact that in times of the Gemara, investing in Shabbos candles was a very significant thing. It's not just a quarter of a candle. We're talking about maybe a half day's wage in getting really nice oil and wicks and or proper candles. And it's not a trivial thing whatsoever. And so to actually have a Chanukiah where you're lighting eight nights in a row in addition to your Shabbos candles is actually a significant investment historically. And you don't want to... You have to kind of acknowledge the investment and become part of the communal effort, as it were, the household effort in the midst.
So correct me if I'm wrong. This is how I'm interpreting what you're saying. He really does not have an obligation to light because the head of the household is lighting. I mean, he has an obligation, but he fulfills it by the head of the household lighting it for him. He has an obligation. The head of the household is lighting it for him. Why does he have to give any amount of money? He has to give money just because he has to show how he's invested in the mitzvah. If he's not himself paying anything for this, so then really he's not showing that he's invested in this mitzvah. He's fulfilling his mitzvah without showing some sort of investment in the mitzvah.
Is this a legal requirement, or is it just a nice thing to do?
So, according to what Steve's saying, it's just a nice thing to do. This seems to be like...
No, there's some things that you have to invest yourself in. So the Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim...
Would he fulfill his mitzvah? Let's say he did not give that pruta. Would he have fulfilled his mitzvah, according to what you're saying, of lighting a Hanukkah candle?
He wouldn't have done the mitzvah, but he wouldn't have... Not done. It's a mitzvah that if you have a house,
Whoa! I thought we were saying that he has an obligation, but he fulfills his obligation by the head of the household is like his messenger to fulfill the mitzvah. But you're saying, but still, he has to give a certain amount to show how he really also wants to invest in the mitzvah. So if that's the understanding, so then let's say he did not give that.
He didn't give.
Did he fulfill his mitzvah according to what you're saying?
I say no.
Why?
He's a guest.
Why? But he has a messenger lighting for him, so why not? This concept of just investing, where does this concept come from? You have to also, show that you're invested in the mitzvah by losing money off this.
It's the same way on the first day of Sukkot you want to own your lulav and etrog.
No, that's very different. There's a halacha. They have to own your
Vanessa. You're saying that like by Kiddush on Friday night. So there's an obligation on every person to make Kiddush. But if the rabbi makes Kiddush for everyone, I don't have to pay him.
Yeah, I don't have to pay him.
I don't have to buy into the wine.
It's similar to that. It's very similar to that.
Apparently not.
Yes, you don't have to pay him for that.
It's something to do with his status as a guest, and that a guest is just receives from the household and doesn't actually have an active participation in the making of the house. And then in order to change his status from that of a guest to a more ownership position, does that through giving the pruta.
That's very similar to what he was saying.
Right, but children have that status as well. 13 out of 5 and it's about paying into the house.
But you're part of the household. You're not a guest. You're defined as part of the household. So let's try to figure out what's going on here. So just in terms of the Rambam, we said that the Rambam, it's very difficult with this Gemara, because the Rambam seems to say that there's an obligation on the house, not on the individual, and yet a guest has an obligation. That's the simplest way of putting it. How could a guest have an obligation if it's just on the house? The host is going to light for the house. He's not in his old house, so why wouldn't? What does it mean that he has an obligation to light? And you can't say that it means that. Just to get back to Yonatan's point, you can't say that it means that he has to light in his old house, because that's not what Reb Zera, who's commenting on this. That's not what he did. He was paying his host. He wasn't trying to find out a way to get somebody to light in his house. That's not what he did. He was relying on his host. So there are two ways to go about this. There's at least two ways. We'll discuss two ways. There's at least two ways of going about this. There could be more also. Just nuances within these two different ways. Let's take approach number one. So approach number one is that there's an obligation. Let's say not like the Rambam first. We'll take the approach not like the Rambam. There's an obligation on each individual to light. Right, there's an obligation from each individual to light. But the way they instituted this obligation was that it should be a household-oriented mitzvah. It's a household-oriented mitzvah. It's when the family or whoever else is living in the house get together to light. Let's say the reason behind that, let's say, is for Pirsumei Nisa. A lot of this mitzvah is about publicizing the miracle. And so therefore, the way they formulated this mitzvah is that it's on each individual, like Rashi, like this first approach, but it is a household mitzvah. It's the family or the house, people that are living together, they come together and they fulfill their mitzvah through one person lighting on this basic level. One person lights for everybody, so that this is everyone joins together in this one person, the head of the household, lighting. So now a guest... How does the guest light? Because a guest is in an interesting situation, because he's living in this house for the time being, but he's not part of that home. He's not a part of that household. So the explanation, which has been given by a few people, is to say that the way he joins in is by giving a certain amount of money. When he gives that money, so that money is not like he's paying for the mitzvah. When he gives that money, that's a form of him just including himself in the household. He's now a part of the household, a home, a family. It's hard exactly to explain how giving over the money fulfills this, how that accomplishes this. But by giving over the money, I now become part of the B'nai Beiso. I become part of the household. Let's say because people who live within the same house, so they easily change money between each other. Whatever this accomplishes, so then people in the house, it's very easy for them to just give money one to the other. So through giving over this money, so he becomes part of the household. He's now a part of the house. Once he's a part of the house, he can now fulfill his obligation through the head of the house, Leiden. Right? And so therefore, the giving of the money has nothing to do with the actual material or the oil or anything like that. It's not like you're not paying for the oil. Right? You're just becoming part of the house. Fine. That's one way of understanding this.
That to me is completely counterintuitive.
Explain.
Because if he's a guest in the house, he's not a member of the household. And if he's paying to be there, all the more so.
He's not paying for rent. He's not paying for rent.
Okay.
Because nobody is going. Airbnb won't accept this either. Nobody's gonna take it for a pruta, for a small amount. That's not viewed as a rental.
But I think if you're viewing the payment not so he becomes included in the household, which takes away his obligation to have delight, if you rather see his payment as, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to articulate it properly, but his payment is he has to light the candle, so his payment is to not to include him in the household, but rather to be included in the mitzvah of lighting the candle.
You're taking a whole separate approach here. What does that mean? This is a whole separate approach.
He's not paying so as to be part of the household. He's paying so as to be part of the mitzvah that he himself has to fulfill as well.
That's a
Stevenson. That's a Stevenson.
He's trying to say.
Yeah,
now, you're not questioning my understanding. You're just giving an alternative explanation.
Well, he is questioning your understanding. Cause,
how?
I agree with him. It sounds like if I'm a guest in your house, like that's less formal than if I'm like renting a room from you.
He's not renting a room. He's just giving a small amount of money to the host.
It makes it look more like that than it was before.
He's not renting the room.
Where does that money go? Is that money being used to... Meaning he's becoming a partner in the oil and the wicks, or he's just throwing money into the big family pot?
We'll get into that. We'll get into that. That will be a discussion that hopefully we'll have time for.
So is it more like in a family, people are giving and sharing all the time, and a guest.
That's my take on it.
And the guest is typically receiving. And as soon as he gives something small, now he's participating.
He's like becoming part of the family. He also gives a little bit.
Mm. So it sort of offsets his status
as a guest. Yeah. Like a guest doesn't give, a guest takes, all of a sudden he's giving. Yes.
To me I just don't understand. So you're just gonna have to clarify me, sir. Because if we're going under the premise that the obligation is on a household to have it lit, there's no reason for him to become part of...
No, I'm not going on the household approach. I'm not within the household approach. I'm within...
Rashi.
Within Rashi, which says that it's an obligation in each individual. I haven't discussed the other approach yet. Within each individual, I'm trying to understand what is accomplished by giving this pruta. So one approach is to say, within Rashi, is to say that you're becoming part of the household, and then you can fulfill your obligation... Yeah, you can fulfill your obligation. There's an obligation to each individual. You can then fulfill your obligation through the head of the household, because the way they formulated this mitzvah is to say that the head of the household has to light for everybody on the basic level. We're just discussing the basic level right now. So the way you become part of the household is by putting that pruta. The other understanding is like what Steve... Let's just... Can we can ask questions later. I just want to finish by... by 10 o'clock. Everyone's welcome to stay after 10 o'clock to discuss it for longer. The other way of explaining this, even within Rashi, is to say that there's an obligation on each individual, is the way Stephen Dezer said, which is to say that there's an obligation on each individual. Forget that. Let's take it back. We'll get to your explanation in 1 second. Let's go with the Rambam now. Let's try to understand for the Rambam. The Rambam says that the obligation is on the house, not on the individual. The big question is, well, how is a guest obligated in anything if it's purely based on the house? This is a very, very tough question for the Rambam. Very tough question. So the way some of the commentators want to explain it is to explain as follows. Really, there's an obligation on the house. They made the obligation to be on the house. That's how they were first formulated. Let's say you don't have a house. What happens to a person who doesn't have a house? So this is also a big discussion, but let's say for the Rambam, if you don't have a house, so they said, if you don't have a house, so then the obligation turns into an obligation on the individual. If you have a home, so then the obligation is not on the individual. You have a home. So then the obligation is to have your house lit. Regardless of how many people live in the house, you have, your house has to be lit. It's an obligation on the house. If you do not have a home, so then they said that for you, because we want the individual to be a part of this mitzvah, and they do not have a home, so then we will say that they have an obligation also. Such a person also has an obligation. And then it becomes an obligation on the individual. So that's why a guest could be obligated. Because a guest is neither here nor there, as we mentioned before. He doesn't have his own home, and he's not part of a home. So he doesn't have anything. And so that's how he could be obligated, according to the Rambam. He could be obligated because when you do not have a home, it turns into an obligation on the individual. When you have a home, it's an obligation on the home itself, not on the individual. For a person who does not have a home, like a guest, or perhaps let's say you're on a plane, whatever the case is, you don't have a home, you're on the plane overnight, whatever the case is, so then you could say that the obligation turns into an obligation on the individual and not on the home. And that's why such a person has an obligation. So why do you have to give a pruta? Why do you have to give that pruta to the host?
Same reason as Rashi.
So you can either say the same reason, so you can say the same reason as Rashi, which is to say that you don't have to say the same reason as Rashi. No, it wouldn't be the same reason. For Rashi, we said that the reason is because you have to become part of the house. According to this explanation, you don't have to become part of the house. You are already obligated. It's not to become part of the house. You already have that obligation. So why don't you just let yourself? So the way they explain it is to say the way Stephen does say it. It's to say the only reason why you're giving money is to show that you are invested in it. Really, the head of the house is your messenger. The head of the household is your messenger. And he's fulfilling your obligation. You could have lit as well if you wanted to. The head of the household here is your messenger. Because he's lighting anyways. So if he's lighting anyways, I don't have to light. Because he'll be my messenger. But once he's my messenger, so then I'll give him money to show that I'm invested in this as well. Right? I want to show that I'm invested in this as well. And so that's the second approach. To show that I also am invested in this.
Why do you have to do that?
What?
Why would you have to
don't know if it's an obligation to do that. I don't know if, let's say, if you didn't do that, I'm not sure if you have, it's possible that you have fulfilled your obligation. I don't know if that's...
Zero would do the same thing by Kiddush. That if he's going to be Yotze with somebody else's Kiddush, he would...
So Kiddush is a little different. I don't want to get... Kiddush is not really... It's not a form of a messenger. It's more of Shemei Ka'ones. It might be like as if you also said it, so that you are involved in the mitzvah. It's a little different. It's not like it's a... there is a difference between Kiddush in this case.
The Peshat of the Gemara is more towards what Steve and Daz are saying.
Why do you say that?
Because he says, Mishtatfana b'plite b'hadei u'shpiza. So he is participating not to become a member, by participating with the Baal HaBayit for the mitzvah.
Is it for the mitzvah?
I want to be a partner for the mitzvah, itself.
Yeah, exactly. The pshat is more saying that than it is saying...
He doesn't say what it's for. Am I being mishtatef as being a partner in the household, or am I being mishtatef as a partner in the mitzvah.
But then it says behadi ushpiza with the balabait.
So I still don't know what that means. Does that mean I'm becoming a partner, a part of the house, being part of the household, or am I being included in the mitzvah itself? It's still unclear to me.
Well, you could say mishtatfana.
Bahadi Ushbiza just means I'm partnering with the host. But I don't know in what. Does that mean in becoming a member of the house? Or is that in part of the mitzvah itself?
You can't partner with the host to become a member of the household.
Partner with the host, what's the host doing? He's lighting candles. The pshat is more towards what they're saying, I would think.
I can't partner with the host to...
No, it's not saying we're partnering with the house. We're partnering with the host. What is the host doing? The host is doing the mitzvah.
Like, he's
doing no, but...
Yeah, I'm trying to support you here.
Yeah, I know, I hear you.
Mishtatana v'priti bahadi ushpiza. Why can't you just translate that as partnering through the pruta to join with the host? I don't know if that's... Is it so difficult in that language to say that I'm joining with the host?
It's not the emphasis on the joining. It's the with the host part. Why is it...
Bahadeh, I could translate bahadeh as... I think I could translate bahadeh as joining with the host. To be included with the host.
Yes,
in his not, action, not in and not in joining the host to become part of his...
But I could understand that as joining the host to become part of the household.
I think it's more reasonable, actually, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I could hear both ways. I could hear both ways. Okay. Just to get to some ramifications, halachic ramifications for these two very different ways of understanding the giving of the pruta. So again, just to review this, and then we'll give two different differences. If you go like Rashi to say that the obligation is on each individual, so then the way you could understand this is that the obligation is on each individual. The guest also has an obligation to light, which is clear. That makes sense. The guest has an obligation to light. So why is he giving a pruta? What does he accomplish by giving a pruta? He accomplishes that the way they instituted it was that the individual has to light. The obligation is on each individual, but in a family household setting, within that household setting. And so by giving the pruta, you become part of that household. I share with the other members that belong to this house. So become part of the household. The other way of explaining it is to say that there's an obligation on the house. But once I no longer have a house, so then it turns into an obligation on the individual. Once it's an obligation on the individual, so then why do I have to give a pruta? So it could be that I'm just doing it to show that I'm invested in the mitzvah. I want to partake. I want to be part of that mitzvah. So if you go to the last page, we're skipping to the last page here. There are two Magen Avrams. The Magen Avram, the first Magen Avram says, "Tzarcha bala bais lahosis ma'at shemen b'shvilo." The Magen Avram says that in the case of a guest, the host has to add more oil for the guest, right? The host is lighting for the guest. The host has to add more oil for the guest. In fact, I believe it's the Eliyahu Rabbah, a different commentator, he adds on to the Magen Avraham, and he says, how much oil do you have to give? What does it mean, a little bit of oil? It means the minimal amount that one needs to light, which is basically a half hour. Mm-hmm. However much is necessary for it to light an additional half hour, then that's how much you have to add on. Huh. Now, why would it have to be that much? If the purpose of giving a pruta is just to be included in the household, so then who cares? If this is a household lighting,
right.
So then you don't have to add more. It's just this is a household lighting, and I'm included in the household. Right. If you say that it's about really being included in the mitzvah itself, so then I can understand, it doesn't have to be this way, but I can understand an opinion which says that I have to include it. How much do I have to add on? I have to add on however much is necessary for him to fulfill his obligation. That's how much I would have to add on. You could argue that point, but I could also understand that point.
That's true, and the Baal Bais is losing out on his pruta. So Steve was saying how, like, it's... Or Steve was saying that it's expensive. It used to be expensive.
So then he would be losing out.
Yeah, he's losing out.
Yeah, according to this explanation, perhaps he'd be losing out.
Mm-hmm. He's okay.
It's got a house.
It's got a house.
A little socialism here.
So now let's get to a second difference, right? So one difference is how much does this impact how much oil you have to put in? If it's about being included in the household, so then it wouldn't impact how much oil you have to be in. If it's about
you can't use the pre-filled cups.
No.
It's like how much you're using every night.
Pour two of them together.
You're saying if you have a guest?
Yeah.
I bought it because I knew that my guest was coming, so otherwise I would not have bought.
That's
the
how much I used yesterday without the guest also. Same.
You could add once.
No, but I knew my guest was coming, so I added more for all 8 days.
Guest showed up on the stage.
I hear the question for that, but a second difference, and then we'll stop. The Magen Avraham says. We'll stop in the recording. Anybody, we can continue this conversation. The Magen Avraham says that nowadays that we light inside the house, he says that our guests should light themselves. Our guests, they shouldn't be mishtatei b'pruta, which is also what's common now. They don't just give a certain amount. But nowadays, guests, now that we light inside, and it's very easy to have multiple menorahs by the window instead of in that case. You go to Israel, you see, it's harder to have. There's less space available. So now that there's a lot of space available, so the guests should also light themselves. The Mishnah Berurah, I didn't quote it, the Mishnah Berurah goes further, and his language is that he can light himself, and he doesn't even have to give a pruta to the host.
What?
He doesn't have to, one second, he doesn't have to give a pruta to the host, he could just light himself. Now, even if you light yourself, do you have to give that pruta or not? Let's say you are lighting yourself. But do you have to give that pruta, even if you're lighting yourself? Do you have to give that pruta to the household?
Whose candles are you lighting?
My own. I'm lighting my own candles. But do I have to give the pruta?
Seems like no.
If you say the purpose of the pruta is to become part of the household, so then without giving the pruta, I'm not part of the household. I don't have a house. I'm lighting in somebody else's house. I'm not fulfilling my obligation if I'm lighting in somebody else's house. The only way I become part of the household and become part of that house is if I give that pruta.
But then
I can light myself. Perhaps I can light myself because now that there's enough room, so why not light myself? But I still have to give that pruta in order to be included as part of the house.
Right.
Which is how some paskin, or some Zaman paskin is this way.
But that's not according to the Rambam. The Rambam, he has no house, so he has a responsibility on himself. So he lights because he has a responsibility.
He doesn't have a house, though.
No, but you're saying that Rambam...
He doesn't need one, you said.
You said if you don't have a house, you still have to light.
Yeah, for the Rambam, correct. Yeah, for that understanding of how to understand for the Rambam, you're right. But according to the other understanding, that the idea is that you should be included as part of the household. So this is Rav Shlomo Zalman has this approach. Rav Soloveitchik also has this approach, that the purpose of the pruta is to be part of the household. So once you're part of the household, if you don't give that pruta, you're not part of the household. So lighting yourself is meaningless because you're lighting in somebody else's house. It's not your house. And so therefore, if you're a guest, the Rosh Hashanah Zalman Pasuk is this way, if you're a guest, even if you're lighting yourself, you should still also give a pruta to your host. Which has major ramifications. If you go somewhere else, if you're staying by someone, and I'm not talking about a hotel. Hotel's different.
Yeah,
but if you're staying by somebody else's home...
If you go to your parents or in-laws?
So parents and in-laws is an interesting discussion, because it could be that maybe you're automatically included as part of the household. So that's a further discussion.
The other thing is your host has to be knowledgeable about the salacha, otherwise they might be offended.
Do you give him a penny?
here's my penny.
If you pay the pruta, then you automatically, according to what I'm thinking, you would turn it into that mahadran version, called echad v'echad, because that would.
You're right. The fact that I'm also lighting turns it into a different status. But I first have to be a part of the house. You're right. This is beginning to discuss the next stage.
But if you didn't give the pruta, then it would be. Just the normal stage. You would be part of the household.
So we're discussing here, I'm lighting myself also. I'm the guest and I'm also going to light. The question is, do I also have to pay him a certain amount?
Not according to the first level.
No,
why?
Yes.
Why? It's not my home. According to one understanding, it's not my house. I'm a guest. I cannot fulfill my obligation by lighting. I can't go to your home and light in your house. I do not my...
He could just pay the pruta, or he could pay the pruta and light.
And light. He could do either one.
He doesn't
but
need to light, really.
But he doesn't need a light, correct. He doesn't need a light. If you want a light, so then that's the second stage,
right.
If you want a light. But in order to fulfill your obligation, you have to give a pruta. Just like I can't go to your home and light, I don't fulfill my obligation by going to your house. So to the guest does not fulfill his obligation by lighting in his host's home, unless, according to this understanding, he gives a pruta. And so therefore he would have to give the pruta. According to the understanding that no, the giving of the pruta is really part of the being involved in the mitzvah itself, so then if I'm actually lighting myself, so then I don't have to give a pruta, I'm actually lighting. So then I wouldn't have to give the pruta. So this would also have a ramification as whether you have to give it or not. I would really suggest, because this is a big dispute, if you do go to someone's house for Hanukkah, give him if you don't want to give a penny because it's embarrassing, so you know, give him $5.
Even so, it might be problematic. I mean, unless they know.
You should teach them. Right. This is a teaching opportunity right here.
You have to give it to buy your way into
the household. Yeah, you should also have this in mind. You have to realize when you're giving it, you're not giving this for the waste of oil. You're not giving it to rent the space. To rent the space would.
That would lead to a different understanding.
Giving it to be part of the household.
Say, hey, now I'm part of your household. Now you got to feed me. You got to buy.
Here's $5. I'm taking that $100 from you.
Yeah, you just go to the refrigerator. You take out a.
I'll do it for a month.
Turn on the TV.
This is only if you want to have somebody in your house who's lighting for you on your behalf, right?
If you don't have somebody, this is assuming that nobody else is lighting in your own home. Correct. That's also assuming that nobody else is lighting in your own home because you already have a home that's being lit. So just to conclude, just to review and then we'll stop. We have two different understandings as to what the word beso is. Ner ishu beso is bias the people in the home or is bias the actual house itself, which would have a lot of differences would come up between these two different understandings, whether it's just the household or the house itself. This would impact the other Gemara as to the fact that a guest also has an obligation to light. Not only does it have an obligation to light, but the way to fulfill that obligation, Reb Zera tells us, is by giving a pruta to the host. So giving a pruta to the host could either make you a part of the household, or giving a pruta to the host is the equivalent of lighting yourself. It's just he didn't want to light himself, so he gave a pruta to show how he's also invested in the mitzvah itself. But really, he could have also lit himself if he wanted to. And these are some of the ramifications for the differences as to how to define what a bias is. Let me just...